Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Go It is a radio.com sports station. Joe Lo and Dibs is the show. Joe is off this week. I am here for him, but Dan Dibley is here. So is Lorenzo Neal. Lo, I'm going to ask you to weigh in on what I said, and if it makes sense, or if I'm missing a point somewhere along the line, because I do think there are a lot of people who look at this instance and say, listen, it is one-sided. There was a horrible act that was committed. I'm on your team. Wait a minute. I was so moved by a gentleman, and I believe he was in Minneapolis, a black man who owned a business, and he was screaming. He was losing his voice. He was in tears. He said, "Why are you doing this to me? Why did you ransack my place? Why did you steal my computer?" He said, "I'm from the ghetto. I tried to make it. I tried to get out. Why did you burn my business down?" And I'm moved now by this gentleman who he knew he had it tough. He knew he had a tough upbringing, and he was doing his small part to make it better for his family. He tried to start a business. And these looters and rioters are just they've ruined his life. Those same looters and the girl. I've heard the story. I'm assuming it's true. It was in the news that the girlfriend of George Floyd had a business, and the looters and rioters burned her business down. So she loses again. She loses her life, the man of her life, and she loses her life after that. That's terrible. That's all. So when I say low, listen, everyone's on the same team. George Floyd had a horrible injustice done to him. I would expect some in the black community to say, stop. Stop with the looting. Stop with the rioting. Stop targeting. Stop threatening home invasion. Stop.
Right. And that's, I think that you make some valid points. I talk, to them, my kids, and I said, hey, look, I said, two wrongs don't make a right. I said, you have to be able to have compassion. You got to be able to forgive, and you got to be able to move on. And I talked to even my son, and he just said, a lot of young black men that are like, man, they're fed up. And I asked, why, you see looting? I said, but what is that going to solve? And he said, you know what? There's a lot of good white cops and doing all those things, but look what it's being portrayed as. Look what's being portrayed. So everyone suffers. And I was asking kind of my son and just some of these things. He said, so I'm not saying I agree with it, Dad. He said, but you got to realize there's certain things that happen and it's a cause and effect. And he said, there's a lot of good cops, but look at everyone's being suffering for this. And it's like, look at people are being targeted for being a cop. It doesn't make it right. But it's because of what they have seen. So now they're going out and they're doing these things and they're saying, well, I'm not saying that this is necessarily right, but they're saying it is I've tried peaceful. You killed Martin Luther King. Because I've asked black, I said, but what is this going to solve? You're going to get people are going to get their own guns and protect their privacy. And you're going to see more people, black, white, purple, because there's more than blacks looting. Let's be honest. And we've seen plenty of videos where it's white, Hispanic. It's not just all blacks. A lot of people are taking advantage of the situation. It's no different than, people take advantage of situations of COVID, all the stuff that's going on. So, and he said, but there is a huge belief of this population has been saying This is just a part of what's going on because of this. And I'm just, and I don't agree with it, but they're saying because this incident, because our voices aren't being heard. How many times have this happened? The cops turned off their body cams. So what if there wasn't no one there to film? What was going to happen? He was just on drugs. He was out of control. So they're looking at all these different issues and saying all these things starting to add up. And you keep saying, just do this, do that. Just it's going to get better. They're looking and saying, how is it going to get better when you see all these videos where white guys fighting two cops officers, a lady and a man? He gets her, their stick, baton. He hits her with it. He beats her and jumps in her car and takes off. A black man would have been shot. I think you guys seen these videos. You saw a woman that, you know, the police officer shoots her. She says she's pregnant. She gets on the ground. She hits him. He's on top of her. He stands up and he unloads. There is so many videos out there that when you see police brutality, and you guys got to look at it. And I'm asking people, go look at it. Go look up some of these videos. And when you see it happen, you're like, okay, so I'm not justifying anything, but I think that you're starting to see this anger, and it's been building, it's been building, it's been building, it's been building. And I think now people are unleashing it. And because they're letting their sins and their demons, they're letting their demons come out, and it's not right, and they're not suppressing the right way. So they're handling things because of frustrations and because of anger and so much pent up dibs that they're letting their demons get the best of them.
Yeah, and there's a certain amount of desperation that's out there, in part because of this COVID-19, because this is the beginning of our 11th week of or 12th week, actually, I believe, of sheltering. And so people who have lost their job or lost their ability to earn, whether it's, you know, restaurant workers or all the other people who've been laid off, that adds to a level right. And a layer of desperation. And to what you're saying, Lo, about not feeling like you have a voice and not feeling like you're being heard. And so you see these instances happen again and again and again, and you can't help but feel the outrage and feel like the only way you can be, quote, heard is by protesting. And unfortunately, when we get into protesting, very rarely does it happen like the image we saw from Denver, Colorado, where people were peacefully protesting. A group of about 500 or so lay down for 9 minutes on their stomach to, you know, represent what happened to George Floyd. It was a peaceful protest. That was what the picture that LeBron James actually sent out. And so, unfortunately, too often you get into these situations where, whether it's troublemakers or some of the protesters or some of the looters, all it takes is a few knuckleheads to break a window. Like Jim was talking about at the Uniqlo, it also happened at the Best Buy in Emeryville. My wife and son were at the Home Depot, Jim, which is right that neighborhood, about 4 hours before. And all of a sudden, somebody from Home Depot gets over the loudspeaker and said, "Hey, we're not letting anyone else in. We've gotten reports that people might be coming to cause problems." And so they ended up, you know, handling their business at Home Depot, and they, of course, made it home without incident. I don't believe the Home Depot was looted, but it just speaks to that level of desperation, Jim. And, you know, when you start to have these things happen, it happens in San Francisco, certainly in Oakland, we know, San Jose, it just gives these troublemakers, people who are there just to cause problems, it gives them license to do that in other communities.
You know, and I'm going to say something else honest. I think LeBron James, you know, using social media to send that photo of the Denver protest out is great. For him to mock the news is not great. It adds to the division. There's a way to... I don't know. Maybe he feels he wants to be a certain voice for a certain audience. That's great. But wouldn't that same message mean so much more to everyone if he said, "Hey, rioters and looters, this is a protest." Not, "Hey, media, this is a protest." It just seems that it adds a little bit to the rancor of both sides. I have a question, and I'm going to ask this question politely. It's not a gotcha question. Does anyone know who Patrick Underwood is?
No.
Okay, Patrick Underwood on Friday night works for the Department of Homeland Security in Oakland. He was shot and killed.
Oh, yes.
And his partner was shot and is in critical condition. I don't hear Mayor Libby Schaaf holding a press conference saying, "We will not have," and by the way, they have not found the person or people who murdered Patrick Underwood. But I don't hear Libby Schaff stepping up and having a press conference. I don't hear Steve Kerr making a comment about that, or Steph Curry or LeBron James or Michael Jordan or Jaylen Brown making those same comments. And by the way, Patrick Underwood is a black man who was murdered in this circumstance.
Right.
And he was nothing more than an officer trying to do his job, trying to protect a building. And they haven't put an all-points bulletin out for his killer yet. I'm going to be honest about the discussion. If those same people who continue to point out the wrongs that are being done, if they point out, hey, when an officer is murdered, hey, you know what? Officer's going to work today. He's going to pull someone over and is going to walk up to that car, and he doesn't know if he's going to walk back to his car. Because every officer's life is on the line every day. You walk out the front door, you don't know if you're seeing your wife or kids. You don't. That's their life. Patrick Underwood died doing service. And I don't hear anyone standing up for him. And I will say this. If those same voices who talk about the injustice also add in the injustice done to the officers, to the Patrick Underwoods of the world, I think that would have so much more heft that more people would want to become involved in this circumstance. Listen, I'm on the side of the George Floyd people. It was awful. But all the stuff going on with the looting and the rioting and ignoring the Patrick Underwoods of the world, that's when you start to lose me. Is that a fair statement to make? Or are they completely different circumstances?
No. I don't think they're different. I think that you see, you know, when you said Patrick Underwood losing his life, I did see that article, and you see an older gentleman, I think, you know, 53 years old. I saw that the other day as well, you know, had over 30 years of law enforcement. And that it's horrible. This is horrible. It's inexcusable. I understand that. And I think that if you asked 90%, I would even say higher, of the people that are out protesting, was this horrible? I would think everyone would agree and say,
I would hope that they would. I'm not as confident as you, but I would hope that they would.
Right. And I think that there is a small amount of people out there that are taking advantage of the situation. It doesn't make it good. It makes it look bad. And I tell people, and I tell, you know, my kids, I said, you got to realize when people see these things, it doesn't necessarily paint people of color in a good light, doesn't paint some white people in a good light. But you got to realize they're still going to be white. You're still going to be black. And it's going to still make people look at you a certain way. You can't necessarily blend in, you know. It's going to be more focused on blacks than white in a lot of these incidents. That's just, you know, some of the things that you got to prepare, you know, your kids. So I think that without a doubt, it's horrific what happened. It's horrible. It's a way, cause when you talk about, you know, every day they go out and they live. I talk to my kids differently than yours. I have a young man who's 22 years old, 6'3", you know, 330. I tell him, hey, look, officer pull you over, you put both hands on the stern wheel. You don't reach, you don't make any subtle moves. White people don't tell their kids that.
I tell my daughters, my daughter drives now. You get pulled over, it's yes, sir, no, sir, whatever you need, sir. You are polite to the... I say to my daughter essentially what you say to your son, right?
You're right, Jim, but it's not even close, Jim. Kid, it's a life or death situation.
It's not even close, Jim. And no, you're right, Dips.
No, I mean, it's one thing to teach your kids to be polite, and I've said the same thing to my son who's 19, you know, 6'2", 220, but he's a white kid. So he's not in any traffic stop anywhere. He's not going to ever have that same fear, that instant fear that Lowe's talking about, especially considering your son is a large black man.
Yeah. And Jim, it's just, and you say, hey, look, son, you can lose your life if you make a subtle movement. I've known guys and I've seen guys that they're not black, but they could talk to the police officer any way they want. Because who they are, because, you know, and it's a totally different. And I'm like, man, you're crazy. I would never think, because some, you got to realize, Jim, they're afraid. And you walk up to the car and you don't know my son, and you walk up to a police officer and he said, and looks at you a certain way. You know, you can't whoop him. You know, you're outmanned. So you do have to, you know, say a certain thing, a certain way. Hey, look, make sure, yes, sir, no, sir, my glove in the glove compartment. Can you get it? Can you do those things? Hey, I don't want to reach in my glove compartment. It's in there. Hey, do you want to have your other officer walk in and undo it? Hey, you're welcome. I can step out of the car. You can, sir. Those are things that it's just a different, you have a different conversation. And that's just, I a lot of guys are saying that. It's not just me, but it's a different conversation that you have, because if you don't, it can cost them their lives.
So then the question ends up being, how does that change? Right? How does that change?
Right.
And does that change solely from the officer's perspective, or does that change from the black
everyone has a job. Everyone's got to do a
there's
job.
An answer, there's an answer I can stand behind, because I do think that there are sides in this. Right?
Agreed.
I think but I think everyone has a standard. I essentially tell my daughter the same thing you tell your son. Your message to me is, but the way your son is perceived is different than the way my daughter is perceived. Correct?
Yes, and the likelihood of a tragically negative outcome. I don't think you there's a lot of stories out there of a teenage white girl being gunned down at a traffic stop.
No, there are not.
Yes, there is a lot about black people being gunned down, Jim, at a routine traffic stop. And
there's no question.
Without having a weapon, without having anything in the car. There has been. I mean, you know, it doesn't necessarily make it fair. And I tell my son, it's not just because it's fair. It's because it's not right. Doesn't mean you can't overcome. And you don't sit there and you hold a grudge and you say, oh, this is, you know, no, you rise up. And you do the things that you need to do. You keep your head down. You grind. You do those things. But everyone just doesn't have that type of perseverance. Everyone didn't have the opportunity to go to a Montessori school and have a great education and do those things. And you got to realize it's a lot of people that I see why officers are afraid and they handle themselves a certain way because they walk up to the car not knowing, you know, who they're pulling over and what can happen. So there is a fear factor there by them as well, because what they've seen and some of the things that they've heard and their perception of certain people and a certain color. So I do get it. But you got to realize have a lot of these things have stemmed. If you can, Jim, tonight, if you get a chance. So this is great, because we'll probably be talking about this tomorrow, too. Watch, it's just this THE, the 13th. If you have a chance to watch, just it's a documentary. Just watch it, and it's stuff that I've already known for years. But just watch it and watch, and it'll teach you. Just it'll go through the jails, the corrections. It'll just show you that you got to look at this thing totally different. I understand what you're speaking, Jim. I promise, I understand, because you're just speaking black and white. You be good, and you're going to get good things. I get what you're saying, because that's who you are. You're like, hey, look, if you take care of, you respect people, you do those things, I don't care, black, white, green, purple, you can have success. I do agree with you, but there is a lot of exceptions and a lot of things, Jim, you got to realize. Just watch this. It's a good documentary called The 13th. And it'll take you through some of it, and you can see, and you'll start to hopefully understand, not about Republican and Democrat. It's just about a movement and what it meant and what it did to the families and black men and how they've been destroyed, all these different things. So there is more than just, we can't just say, oh, it's just one incident. It's a lot of things that are deep rooted, you know, that are there, that underlying things that are there that we as a country and we as men and women have to teach our kids tolerance, but not a handout. It's a hand up. It's about educating. It's about putting people in a position to be successful. It's about how do I educate and take it's a lot of people that are lost, and they are lost. You can't save everyone. I get it. But we do have to do a better job of coexisting together.
All right, the 13th is what it's called, correct? The 13th.
Yes.
I'm gonna work at looking at that today, and I don't know if we'll do a dissertation on it tomorrow, but I'm sure you and I will have a discussion about it,
Thanks.
At some point, because you've asked me to do that, and I respect you, and it's well said. Everything you're saying right now is certainly well said and well taken and educating for me, and I hope for many people who are listening here to 95.7 The Game today. So there's a lot of other, there are a lot of other areas in this arc of what's happening, and sports is included in this arc, and some of it is happening here in the Bay Area. A story that I thought was a good story has turned into one of a mini conflict and has been batted back as maybe not as good a story as I was led to believe it was. And this has to do with the San Francisco 49ers. Jed York, owner of the team, commits $1 million to social justice causes. On the surface, Dan, it sounds like a good thing, right? I'm given $1 million. We want to change the world. It sounds like a good thing, right?
Yeah, $1 million. It sounds like it could make a big impact, but it's not where the story ends, I don't think, Jim.
No, I don't think it does. So the 49ers organization committing to support the legislative priorities of the Players Coalition, that's the National Football League, as a Players Coalition. I know I'm a Bears fan, so the Chicago Bears have a core group of six players, black and white players, on this Players Coalition. Each team has one, but they're donating $1 million, the 49ers are, to local and national organizations who are creating change. Eric Reed, the former 49er, takes to social media and says, "Nobody wants your money, Jed. We want justice. We've always wanted justice. Y'all are truly deluded." Now, some guy offers, you know, whatever his background is, guy offers $1 million to be on your team, and you bat it back, Lowe. I'm on the outside looking in at this.
And Coles, I'm glad you're coming to me, because I totally understand what you're saying. You're like, look, here's $1 million, can help change and help at least educate people. Yeah. And I totally, Coles, and here's the thing. I understand what you're saying, and you're 1,000% right. But let me tell you what Reed is saying, and I'll make him 1,000% right. We've gotten a welfare check and food stamps for too long. Okay? You've done that. We've been in that space forever. You know what I'm saying? And what has that led to? When you took took a man out of the house and you said, you know what? If you make this much, the man can't be in the house. You broke the black family. Even though with the cause, what it was meant for was good, but what was the purpose? And so when you think about a lot of these things that has happened over the years, you have weakened a society and you have weakened a generation of people. So yes, I can put a band-aid. You can't put a band-aid on a shotgun wound. This thing is, the system is broke. The fundamental thing, this does not work. You can't just say, okay, if you have a baby, you know what? Now if you have a baby, you will have another one. You're going to get more food stamps, get more welfare, more of those things. Because that doesn't lead to a healthy systemic society. And whether it's Democrat, Republican, a lot of people prey on the black vote. They prey on this because of the fact it's about what they want. And it's about how do I power myself, because if I can do certain things. You go and you just start to look at history and what is it doing? How are they? What's the underlying thing? And so I think Ed is just saying, look, we need more than that. If you have a system that, okay, boom, you're teaching mothers how to mother, meaning that, okay, you got 30 or 40 people that are on welfare, but at the same sense, one day you got 10 mothers that you're teaching them how to parent, how to babysit the right way, and the other 20 women are out in a factory, they're learning a skill. So now you're helping the system, because you're not just saying, here's the check. Oh, here's the money. He's saying, how do we educate people? How do we move people from just saying, I'm going to be codependent on the government and not necessarily I want to be more efficient? So I think that's the whole thing that's getting lost, because people can throw money at the deal dibs, continue to throw money. But there's got to be more than that to change the mindset, and because there's a lot of people that believe the mindset needs to be changed as well, Dan.
Right, and that's kind of what Eric Reed was saying, and he mentioned that, and he and Torrey Smith were going back and forth on, you know, the nature of Jed York's donation. Torrey Smith was defending and thanking Jed York,
right,
whereas Eric Reed was saying, hey, this guy begged me not to kneel back when he was kneeling. So it's tough, because you look at the actual amount of money, $1 million, I can't help but think that money could be used to help fight these injustices. But at the same time, you're right, Lo. It's not a problem that can be fixed with money. There's not enough money in the world to fix what I think is a major problem, the major problem in America, which is underlying racism and underlying racial issues. So I can't say to Eric Reed that he's wrong for thinking that the donation isn't the right thing to do. But at the same time, if you're an organization, if you're Jed York, I'm sure he's frustrated and he wants to try to help. So that's what he thinks is going to be helpful. So it's difficult. It's a difficult thing to look at.
Can I ask the natural follow-up to Eric Reed? And I'm not saying that either of you is going to have the answer to this, but when he says nobody wants your money, we want justice, we've always wanted justice, what is justice? Define what justice is and how we get there. And
that's great. That's a great question. You're right, Coach.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
hear tough. The slogans and the jingoism. I hear it all the time, the systemic racism. I hear it, but I don't hear anyone define it. Help me get there.
See, well,
there's an ugly part of education called critical race theory in which they never define anything and you're always a racist.
Right.
And I don't think that helps anything. So help me define it because I want everyone to be on the same team on this. And I don't know if we get there.
When I think about just justice, the first thing I think about is when you see a situation where one individual murders another, the thought that there would be legitimate recourse and that person would be brought to justice. And what we've seen over the course of multiple police-involved killings is that that hasn't come to pass in very many instances. And you could go back 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, however far back you want to go. So for me, Jim, the first layer of this is the idea of just justice itself. When you see a situation, and you can go all the way back to Rodney King. I was living in L.A. and working on a college radio station. I covered that trial every day. And you see it over and over and over, and yet the four officers are all exonerated. And here we are 30 years later, and these things are not only still happening, but they're happening with worse consequences, and yet there's no sense of justice. So when I hear you talk about what justice is, that's the first thing I think of.
Go ahead, Coase. I mean,
the situation.
I'm gonna ask
George
you a question
Floyd.
Too, Coase. Go
okay,
ahead.
Go
I'm
ahead.
Ask you a question.
Okay, okay cool.
Before you go, okay. Yeah. My thing is asking you: when you see these things happen, okay, the looting and stuff, how does that? I'm not speaking because you're not all white men. I know Dibs has a different take. I have a different take. How does that make you feel? Does that make some sense of racism? There, you know, because everyone has a bit of racism and to a certain degree. I think that everyone has certain prejudices, whether maybe against a person or a sin or a crime, you know what I mean, that we're against. So when you see that, does that further, because I'm just asking as a black man, does that further you away from saying those, does it make you look and say, man, a not understanding? Is it a lack of, do you look at it as, I don't understand it. I don't get it. Or do you say, I do understand what's going on? Or are you just like, or do you be like coming, man, they're pushing themselves further away from getting justice. How do, because there's a lot of people feel in your way. So how, what does this
That's
give
a great
you? What
question.
Does it make you feel like?
That's a great question. And I'll tell you what, we've got to step aside. We'll discuss that when we continue. That's what's coming up on the game, brought to you by Chilton Auto Body. Chilton Auto Body is open to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options. Along with free pickup and delivery, Chilton Auto Body now offers virtual estimates and curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your own vehicle. Book an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. Joe Lowendibs, the name of the program, will tackle that question, very difficult and honest question that Lorenzo Neal just posed. That's all straight ahead on 95.7 The Game.
Joe Lowendibs continues on 95.7 The Game.
All right, let's keep it rolling here. It's the Power Hour, right? That's what we got coming up here. It's you know, time for us to gear ourselves up and get it rolling. Welcome to the Money Spot. One consecutive hour of commercial-free gorgeousness. Joe usually ad-libs something fun. I'm not even going to try to do that. But it's brought to you by O'Donnell Financial Group. Survive before you can thrive. Call the O'Donnell Financial Group today and let them help you thrive. How you doing, everybody? Jim Cozumar in for Joe Fortenbaugh. I'm in all week for Joe Fortenbaugh, but Dan Dibley is here, so is Lorenzo Neal, Joe Lowendibs all this week. And if you download the Radio.com app, you Get to have Joe Lowe and Dibs anywhere you go. Download the radio.com app. Do it today. And you can always listen to 95.7 The Game. It is going to be a very important and busy day here at 95.7 The Game. We invite you to be a part of it, whether it's on the text line or on the phone lines as well. And the number's the same. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570. At 8:30 today, we'll be joined by former 49er great Eric Davis. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll be joined by E40. We will talk about sports and its role in change for positive with both people. And I know that some people have called today, and we understand that emotions run hot. But we want to make sure everyone understands. We're trying to have an open discussion and be respectful of everyone's thoughts. And I know, Lorenzo, you asked a question prior to the break, and I want you to re-ask the question so we're all on the same page, and then I'll give you my answer.
Yeah. First of all, Jim, you look pretty cold there in that little, you know, your little black jacket
you.
And your little scarf on. You're drinking a little hot tea right now, a little hot toddy?
No, I'm doing fine. It's a delicious, a nice cold water, keeping the pipes loosened, you know.
There you go. It's great. It's great. It's good to see you, Jimmy. It's good to see you.
Thank you, my friend.
No, I was just asking a question, Jim, because, you know, I often think that as a black man, I wonder how does white people feel when you see guys looting or you see people looting, whether it's white, black, but mostly when you see it's black looting, when you see that, does it take away? Does it make you wonder? Because I'm wondering, man, if I'm as a black guy, I'm thinking, man, is that causing more racism? Does it cause a group of white people that don't understand or that do understand that have a different perspective say, man, what the hell is going on? What's going on? How is this going to solve a problem? How does it make how does it make you feel? Because I don't know. I just know that as a black person, sometimes I'm thinking, man, I wonder what they're feeling. I understand what some of the blacks are doing, even though I don't necessarily agree with it. But I do like, well, but how does white America, the majority of men your age, feel about certain things when they see this happening?
Well, I can't say that I can speak for, you know, men my age, white men at all. I can speak for me. And
right.
I will tell you honestly, when I see that, I wonder, what are they doing? What do they think they're accomplishing? What are they fixing? Who's going to look at this and say, oh, yeah, I'm with you now. I get it. And I do think it drives a greater divide between the two sides because I don't get it. I don't know if anyone's been able to explain it to me adequately. And I have a hard time understanding if a wrong is done to somebody, me going to a business, you know, random business in my town and just wrecking it or wrecking it, running inside and grabbing something or worse yet, walking down the street, watching someone wreck it, jump inside and then me just jumping inside to grab it. I don't know how I feel better by that. And I certainly don't know how I'm convincing someone to see what I'm trying to get them to see. So that's for me. That's when I see this stuff happening, and I'm not just saying it's when black America goes in, because I think we were shown enough pictures of white America and every other color under the sun going into buildings and taking things.
Right, but I'm just saying because you see the majority and you see that it's done to a black man, and then you look at a people, and does it change? And then my question to you is like when you see a war and you know we're at war and it's whether it's Iran or Iraq and you see people dying, of course, maybe you're not necessarily happy, but do you have those same sentiments? Do you look at war in a situation or you don't compare? You know, because some might say, hey, look, we're at war. This is going on. You know what? So we're doing those things. But how do we view when kids and people, innocent people, are losing their life or, you know, their house being destroyed in war? And if I, how do you see that differently? It kind of, I'm just trying to see where you're at in that particular incident as well.
Sure. It depends on the war and it depends on the fight and depends. I think we don't want, you know, in general, it's horrible that if you're saying civilians, when something happens to civilians, it's in general, it's horrible that anything happens to civilians in the form of war. I'm not pro war, but I do understand that in the reality of life, war does happen, and sometimes war does have to happen. But I certainly feel bad when what are they, the horrible phrase, collateral damage?
Right.
Yeah, I feel horrible about the collateral damage.
And that's, and so my point, what I'm trying to make is that's how a lot of blacks feel right now in this situation, Jim. So just wanting you kind of to be like, okay, I don't agree with it as well, but I'm just telling you, a lot of blacks are men. This is when they're pent up, all these things happen. So they're saying this is collateral damage. I'm not saying all, because I don't, just like you saying, you're not speaking forward, but that's, I'm just letting you know the other side, how some people feel.
Well, I appreciate you expressing that. I do. I appreciate you expressing that. I think it's important for everyone to try and help
right.
other people down the road. Doesn't mean that everyone hears that and is going to accept it. Some people are going to
totally
hear
agree.
And go, maybe
totally,
I get it. Yeah, maybe I
totally
get it.
Agree.
Yeah. I want to circle back to this 49er circumstance with Jed York donating $1 million to the Players Coalition and national organizations on creating change. Eric Reed, former 49er, immediately on social media says, we want justice. We've always wanted justice. Y'all truly deluded. Kind of taking a direct shot at Jed. Torrey Smith got involved in this. And I need clarification. And Dan, maybe you can help me on this. Because Torrey Smith had a comment about it saying, hey, the guy's given $1 million. But then Eric Reed clarified why he was saying what he was saying. Am I getting the story correct on that?
Yeah, Eric Reed clarified it by saying that Jed had told him, he had, quote, begged him not to kneel. And he says to Torrey Smith, you speak based on your experience, and I understand that. However, I can tell you that you never heard him say don't kneel because you never knelt. He begged me not to kneel. And this was after Torrey Smith had said that he was there and watched the way that Jed handled Cap's protests. He was willing to support in any way possible and was trying to figure out and understand how to help. I never heard him say, don't kneel one time. So this is Torrey Smith and Eric Reed with different experiences, different interpretations of the time. And, you know, if Eric Reed's the one kneeling and he says Jed York begged him not to kneel, I totally understand and appreciate that. And that's why Eric Reed is saying that he doesn't want Jed York's money, because he feels like Jed York wasn't there to support the protest when they needed it, and now he's trying to basically, quote, throw money at the problem.
And we'd ask all of you out there to, if you have an opinion on Jed York offering up $1 million to the Players Coalition, trying to create change, how you feel about that versus Eric Reed saying, you know what, we don't want that. You begged me not to kneel. Now you're going to give me $1 million? The heck with you. I don't want your $1 million. 888-957-9570. You can hit us on the text line as well at 888-957-9570. There is a, I'll tell you, there are a lot of people who I have talked to, and I will put myself in this camp. I might stand shoulder to shoulder with Eric Reed if he has a belief about this. I might march down the middle of the street with him. But when he takes it to the field, he loses me. That's a difficult place to send a message. And I'll just ask any of you listening now, if you're on your way to work, if you're at your job, why don't you go into a meeting with the five biggest clients your business, your work does business with? And right at the start of the meeting, pontificate about all of your political beliefs. Tell them how what you really feel about all of your political beliefs. All right. If you're a Democrat, spout all the things you want about that. Or if you're a Republican, spout all the things. Let me see how quickly your bosses will allow that conversation to go on. But outside, if you're at the corner bar, if you're down, what's the name of the bar down the street from our place? The Ship, Shipmate?
The Old Ship, Jim.
The old ship. Know your bars. By the way, thank you, D-Med. Thank you, Dibby. you go there. And you want to talk about, you can talk all you want. Your bosses will let you say what you want. They might even agree. They might disagree and have a polite conversation. But that's somebody's business. And 70,000 of their most important clients are sitting there. Okay? You can't mess with a guy's business. And the NFL's business was messed with. And with that being said, Roger Goodell came out with a statement regarding the circumstance that happened throughout last week and into the weekend, saying that we need to have, and I'm paraphrasing, need to have change, and this needs to have attention drawn to it. You know, do you buy the commissioner coming out and making a statement on this?
Yeah, I do, but I can't, because when I look at Colin and he allowed, my thing is, I don't know if I would have did what Colin did. I'm just going to tell you, I don't know if the risk was worth the reward, but I'll tell you right now, Colin, what he did showed courage. I probably wouldn't have done it. I'm not going to be lying, because I know the ridicule that I would have taken. But you got to realize what he did, I think it's different, Coase, than going to your business and spewing out all your differences. I think this is comparing apples to oranges. One, it's not before, it's not during the game. He doesn't walk out on the field and get in a huddle and take a kneel and says, I'm not playing or do. It's before the game. It's an act before the game. The cameras go to him and he's doing it. And why is the cameras deciding to go to him? Because they know it's conflict. Why is the media going to him? Because they know it's conflict. They don't have to pan the camera to him. He's doing that. No one knew. He was doing it all year. But then it's like with Jesus. They crucified him. He came in on Palm Sunday. Hell, Hosanna. 3 days later, they wanted ready to have a murder because he stood for something. And when you stand for something, and you talk about, with all due respect, when you talk about, the national anthem, you got to realize, dude wrote that in prison and talked about the blood of black slaves. So when we talk about this stuff, we got to understand and know the history of a lot of these things with all due respect. And I understand things have changed and it's a way better than what slave. But at the same sense, you got to understand too, Jim, that this says, Scott Keyes was in prison and he's talking about the blood of the slaves and all those different things. When he's writing that, that anthem had nothing to do with black folks. So these are the things that we have to realize. And so Colin was kneeling because he's saying, hey, there was injustice. Now, did Colin do all the things right? No. And we soon found that out, because right after it happened, everyone wanted to punch holes, the pig socks, all the stuff that he did. Everyone went out after him because they wanted to take away from the issue that was at hand. See, we're quick to do that Houdini. What's here, though? Let's not talk about this. Let's go. Boom. Let's go discourage it. That's the thing, Dan, that this country and what people do a great job at, Dan, in my opinion.
And it's partly the nature of it. It's kind of a bait and switch, like you're saying, because instead of Colin Kaepernick and his protest against racial inequality and injustice, it became about the national anthem, which it was never about the national anthem. But that's the way that was, I think, co-opted and corrupted. And now when you see these situations where people want to protest, people want to be out there protesting peacefully, and some, as Jim was mentioning, black, white, people of all different kinds have chosen to use this opportunity to loot and set fires and sickeningly kill somebody here in Oakland, somebody who was trying to do their job. All these things distract from the message, and it's bad and it's sad, but at the same time, Jim, it's real. It's real emotion. People are out there and they're frustrated, and people who are out there looting, many of whom are just trying to get a win. People who have been oppressed and people who feel like the system is not designed to help them. So you go out and you protest and you get into a situation where you see an open window and you think, today I'm going to get a win. I'm not going to feel like the system's on top of me. I'm not justifying looting. I'm not justifying people who burn police cars and who act out in this heinous way. But I'm trying to put myself in that mind space where you're feeling like you're put down all the time. And this is your only way to lash out.
And Jim, you got to realize too, Jim, when you're talking about Colin, you got to realize, look how many sponsors wanted to pull out, but yet and still they had everyone. Look at all the people that capitalized on it. Trash, making napkins with the flag, all those different things. It's not supposed to touch the ground. Look at all the cups. Look how people branded and took advantage of something that here's what it is. But look how many people got money off of it. And then when I'm telling you these things, these are things you got to do the research and also understand this for you can better understand. And I challenge you guys to go out and look at what is Alice and find out what Alice is and who, and it's big companies that say, hey, we want to.
You mentioned this before. It's called, what is, what is Alice, or is Alice the name of it?
Just Alice. It's just, you see it behind some of the presidents.
I've never heard of this.
But when you do some of this stuff, you'll start to see, some of these things, these underlying, and this is just mostly all the big corporate. So what it is, Jim, it's a name, but corporations, they're part of it. They sponsor. So they can write in to their senators or whatever, lawmakers. And just like when Trayvon got killed, you can protect, stand your ground. That wasn't a build by them. That was a build by Alice. And that's why he got off. He followed this kid. You heard him say, the cop said, you follow him? He said, yeah, and he's black. And the officer said, you don't need to follow him. And because he had said, so what about Trayvon standing his ground? So because Alice, because of these deals that are out there, and because we're talking about big corporations and stuff, you get to see who really runs the country. It's so much more deeper than this. So when you get a chance to see what Alice is and how it backed that law, you know, stand up, you know, stand your ground, go see who's, it's not an individual. It's the corporations that have a sphere of influence that also, from prisons to everything, have been systemic in this whole process that we're failing to realize.
Dan, we got a lot of assignments here. I got to look up the 13th. I got to go to Alice.
Alice is just a corporation out there. The 13th is just good knowledge for you to, I think that it'd be just good for you to look at. That's all. I think everyone should just take a look. And it's not about picking a side. It's just about understanding people. That's all.
Man, Lowe's got me doing homework, too, on this thing called the Bible. Is it Bible? This Jesus? I'm trying to write these down, Lowe. You're
Jesus,
coming in.
I love you. It's Jesus. I love you guys.
Just a brief moment of levity. Just come on.
There you go. We needed that. We definitely needed that. Joe Lowe and Dibs here, 95.7 The Game. You can always join us, 888-957-9570. We know that, listen, this is running hot. Everyone's running hot. If you think you can kind of keep it together and add to the discussion, we welcome you to. If it gets a little hot, listen, it doesn't mean we don't respect that. It's getting hot in here. It doesn't mean we don't want to hear your voice, but we want to, you know, it can be harder to maybe make the point and you get out over your skis or the anger can sometimes get in the way of the message.
Right.
And so, you know, feel free to join us. At 888-957-9570. A couple of ways I want to go here. We could do this. What changes can be made that show sport is being a part of this? And I know the example of the Rooney Rule comes up. And I know, Lowe, the NFL floated that trial balloon of, you know, you hire a black GM, a black head coach, you move up X amount of spaces in the draft. And when you first heard of that from the National Football League, when that little trial balloon was sent out, what were your thoughts of, hey, well, the NFL is thinking of, boy, if I'm a Cleveland Browns fan and all of a sudden I hire a black head coach, hey, I'm picking 14th. I'm not picking 30th or whatever
it
is.
Right. I hated it. But here's the deal, though. I looked at it and I was like, the intentions were good. But the cause and the outcome would have been horrible. It would have caused more social divide. It would have caused more systemic depression. It would have put situations where you would have had more racism, even at the more forefront. I say that with a humble heart. When you think about what it would have done to a lot of hardworking Americans, it would have put other coaches at a disadvantage. And it made people believe that black people were given a handout again, once again, instead of a hand up. So I don't like it. I'm glad that Guy stood up and said, this is something we will not take. I want to get it on my own merit and not because of the color of my skin. So I'm glad that it didn't pass. It was very, very, I think, disrespectful in a way. But it just goes to show you what America has to do, even in football.
Do you think they were trying to do it to fix the problem? Or do you think they were trying to do it to pat themselves on the back? And Dan, you could you can weigh in on that one, too.
Please,
well,
Dan,
what fixes the problem? Because if you look at Division I college football coaches in the FBS and you look at 128 jobs, and as of 2 years ago, there were only 12 African-Americans who had those jobs. That's less than 10%. It's about 9%. If you look at the percentage of players in college football who are African-American, it's probably darn near a half or even higher. So how do you fix it? If you're not going to incentivize teams, you have a Rooney Rule, which clearly has not worked because it's been the one token interview and you move on about your business for the most part, and you're not seeing an influx of candidates. And part of the problem, in my opinion, is you don't see it at the college level. Until you get college head coaches of color and coordinators of color, that way they can matriculate up to the NFL ranks, to the NFL level. So I ask you, I put the question right back to you, if the draft choice move, and I understand what Lowe was saying, Lobama, Barack Lobama, and I appreciate the impersonation just to keep it light, Lowe, I do. But if that if that incentivization doesn't work, what does work? Because we've seen this over the course of time. You're not seeing the same number of GM candidates and head coaching candidates.
You are leading me right down the road that I have wanted to do an entire four-hour show on. And that is, it has to do with the Rooney Rule. I want to first touch on your point about the colleges with only 12 black head coaches in 100 and blah,
this
blah,
is as
plus
of 2 years
programs.
Ago. I couldn't find okay. the current
fine.
Stat, but let's
yeah.
just say it's about the
hey,
same.
You know what? Even if you double the number, it's still low compared to the 100-plus programs right. out there. And colleges are far weighted towards the progressive side. They are far weighted towards inclusion, diversity, their students are, their professors are. So you have to ask the progressive-minded heads of universities why they don't think that way when it comes to their football programs. I think that's a great question to ask those places. But on the Rooney Rule, it has been around 20 years. Is that correct? We've had the Rooney Rule for 20 years?
That ballpark, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, it's right in the ballpark. I have maintained for the past couple of years, and now if it's the 20-year anniversary, I truly hope that we now look at the Rooney Rule and abolish it. Take the Rooney Rule out of the National Football League. The Rooney Rule has done two things. Dan touched on one of them. And this is my belief. The National Football League is run by a large number of limousine liberals. You go up and down the National Football League, you see Ross with the Dolphins as a progressive. You see Khan with the Jaguars. You see Mara, Rooney, Wilf, Hallis, Ford. All of them liberals, limousine liberals. Everyone says they're all Republicans. They're not. They're not. There are some, but they're not. But you know what it does? It gives every organization the out. We interviewed a black candidate. Now we can get on with our business. It gave every owner an out. And secondarily, and don't discount this, they get to go to their cocktail parties and say, look at us. We're trying to help the black man. We're interviewing a black man. I think now is the time. If I were a black head coach, I would say, let's get rid of the Rooney Rule. Let's see just how honest they are about wanting to interview and have us as their coaches. Because now they have a rule that protects them. If they don't have the rule, let's see how honest they are about what they say they stand for. I think that would be fantastic if they got rid of the Rooney Rule. Let's see how truly honest you are with your beliefs that, hey, we're helping these guys. Look at them. We're giving them interviews.
Well,
how's that,
that
for a stance?
Well, I'm listening, and you say that, and you say the Rooney Rule is 20 years, and think about how many black coaches have had the opportunity. Why don't you go back before those 20 years, before it was adopted? Coles, answer your question. History's got to wait. Just look at history. Before that Rooney Rule came into place, they're not even close to the amount of black coaches. So it goes to show you, and it goes to tell you, that since the Rooney Rule, look how many, and it's still under, and it's still way too, it's way,
underrepresented.
It's way less. Absolutely.
Underrepresented.
But
yeah.
Go back 20 years before the Rooney Rule. And that's why do you think it was put in place?
And you mentioned all those limousine liberal owners. And if you go through one by one, the majority of them have hired a black head coach. Miami has one right now. Minnesota had Leslie Frazier. And I don't have the entire list of the guys you ticked off exactly in front of. But you
so
conveniently
you
left
works?
Out the other. Well, let's talk about the limousine conservatives then, because they're all driving in limos, and we know that. Jerry Jones, they, I don't believe, have had a black head coach. New England, it's been Bill Belichick. He's been great, obviously. He's Bob Kraft, the owner of that team, would be an owner that you left out. So I think what Lowe's saying has great merit, to the extent that since the rule was put in, the number of black head coaches has gone up. Now, whether or not the rule itself, I agree with you, Jim, that a lot of teams treat it in the way you're saying, which is, all right, we'll check this box, we'll do this interview, and we'll go back to the old boys club. But I'm asking both of you again, what's the solution? What is the thing that's going to make these owners? And I don't have pictures of all 32 NFL owners in front of me, but I believe it's 32 white people, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, you've got Shad Khan of Jacksonville. I apologize. He's a person who would not qualify as white, I would imagine, quote unquote. But to that point, what's the solution when you have a majority white ownership How do you motivate them to step outside their comfort zone?
You want me to go low or you want you to go?
No, go ahead. Close.
My belief is if you truly believe it's worked, let's get the rule out and see if it's worked, because then they'll continue to hire in the same rate or a greater rate. If they don't, then they've exposed, and all owners, this is all owners across the board, have exposed themselves as, we put the rule in place to check us, we've checked our box. And then you can really point to, hey, you guys didn't really hold up to your end of the bargain. If you got rid of the rule, you then, well, I think then all of a sudden, once you've exposed them, then doesn't some change have to happen? Now they've got the out. If you don't give them the out and they don't do anything, now you've got them. Or would you rather sit there and say, nah, we'll take the interview?
Yeah,
I mean, it's not an easy answer.
No,
I'm just posing a different angle. I'm just saying, listen, owners have given themselves a great out. Look at us. We're interviewing people of color. Aren't we? Ain't we great, everybody? And, I'm a Bear fan. I don't care who the coach is. Lovie Smith was my head coach for a while. He got me to the Super Bowl. I went to the Super Bowl. I did not root for the Bears because Lovie Smith was the head coach. You just want qualified people. Owners, you're telling me you're going to find qualified people. All right, let's take your safety net away. And if you're wrong, then we got you. Then we know something has to happen. Now, what that something is, I don't know. We'll get there when we get there.
That's not the way the system works. It's not a case of, well, you know, you've hired five straight white GMs,
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.